Completely Conspicuous, episode 272, April 2nd, 2013. Completely Conspicuous. I'm your host, Jay Kumar. This week, I've got part one of my conversation with guest Matt Fillion as we discuss narcissism. I've also got the Bonehead of the Week and music from Jeff the Brotherhood, Le Butcherettes, Sleater-Kinney, and Ty Siegel. As always, please send any comments, questions, or belated April Fool's pranks to j.kumar@gmail.com. Also, please check out Completely Conspicuous at compconcast.blogspot.com and on Facebook, and you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/coomdog. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Now here's Jeff the Brotherhood with Shredder. And now, on to my conversation with Matt Fillion.
All right, it's another Thursday night with Matt Fillion. How's it going, Matt?
Cheers. Doing all right.
Cheers to you. Seems like we're covering all the big topics of, you know, of mankind. You know, we talked about anger. I figured there was another good one we talked about. Well, profanity, that was a good one.
Profanity.
And tonight, wanted to talk to you about narcissism, which kind of, it's funny. It just sort of like... From time to time, I just realize, you know, like, what a narcissistic society we are. You know, you walk down any street and, you know, 9 out of 10 people will be looking down at their phones, you know? So I kind of, just getting ready, I was just, I literally put it in Google, the word narcissism, and The Atlantic posted an article like 2 days ago about the internet narcissism epidemic. Mm-hmm. I was like, perfect. You know, basically, there's a study... The psychologist put out said that we're in the midst of a narcissism epidemic, and I guess actually there was a 2009 book that they had, but they, let's see, They have a study that they cite among a group of 37,000 college students, narcissistic personality traits rose just as quickly as obesity from the 1980s to the present. So, and this is in 2009, so,
these are the actual, like, textbook narcissism. Like, this isn't just, like, people are self-absorbed.
This is actually the traits.
Testing people for narcissistic personality disorder and coming up with
Narcissism levels among millennials are higher than in previous generations. I mean, there's all this shit about, you know, but there's a high correlation between narcissistic personality inventory scores and Facebook activity. It's just kind of funny that, the 1970s was, you know, called the me decade, you know, kind of coming after the we decade in the 60s. But since then, I mean, like, we're 100% way more narcissistic now than we were then, I think everybody's just so self-involved now.
It's,
And I'm including myself in, we obviously are heavy users of Facebook and shit like that, right?
You're talking to someone...
We're doing a podcast, for Christ's
sake. Yeah, but two guys doing a podcast, one of whom is a self-admitted Facebook addict, and myself, like, I'm like, yeah, there's a narcissism problem going on out there.
We're not pointing the fingers at anybody else.
We are part of the problem.
Yeah.
But I saw a picture the other day of the meta of this was fantastic. It was a photo on Instagram of a guy taking a phone photo of his son's spilled milkshake at McDonald's, where the guy, the father, had actually said, "I got to Instagram this shit." And took an artsy photo of this milkshake that his son had spilled. And somebody else then took a picture of that and posted that to their Instagram. So like
this player, somebody taking a picture of the guy taking
the picture? Of the guy taking the picture because he thought it was ridiculous that somebody else, instead of, you know, cleaning up his son's milkshake, was taking a picture of the milkshake spill. But then this guy thought, you know, elevated himself above, well, I'm going to judge this guy for posting a picture.
Well, it's like Instagram. Remember, did you ever watch the show Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Remember the episode? I think it was the final episode where they basically see a guy getting mugged and they don't do anything, and it's actually in Massachusetts in some fictional town, and they get arrested for I forget what the charge was, of basically just not giving a shit, you know?
And they ended up having all the character witnesses and basically vilifying them. Well, that's part of the reason.
But that's like, nowadays, if that happened, you know, would people be filming it on their camp with their cameras as opposed, you know what I mean? Like, if somebody's getting, like, mugged or stabbed, odds are that instead of, like, calling the cops or something...
They're all going to break out their phones.
Yeah, they're breaking out their phones and they're taking pictures.
Think about it, it's that first... That first thought is no longer to become involved in the situation. It's, how can I post this online? Even when it does some societal good. I'm thinking of the guy that recorded Romney on his speech. I don't think... there has to be, regardless of whether you agree with what he did or not, there had to be a degree of self-involvement there going, this is going to be so cool to post this online.
You know, right, yeah.
And then to have him come forward 6 months later, oh, people aren't talking about me anymore. Maybe I should spark the discussion again by coming forward and saying why I recorded him saying this. Like, everybody...
It was Jimmy Carter's grandson or something, right? He's the guy who found it, right?
Found the video. Yeah.
It was some dude who just worked as a waiter or a caterer or something, right?
Yeah, he had. I think he said he had spoken before, and he thought he'd bring the phone to get, you know, to record the speech for posterity's sake, and he ended up catching this, you know. But I walk around with a camera half the time anyway. My first thought generally isn't like, I can't wait to post this and see how many hits I can get. I'm narcissistic enough to go, I can't wait to see what my friends say about this, though, which I am completely guilty about. There's at least five times a day where I'm like, how can I turn this into something interesting to post online that my friends will talk, that'll chat about it, you know? But that's my narcissism.
It's funny because a buddy of mine just sent an email around. Like, there's a group of us who just kind of send emails around to each other. And he wrote about how Facebook, his father-in-law is always on Facebook. And all he does all day is post things, like share articles and stuff. And he's kind of a hippie, so he's always posting stuff about hemp and, you know, evil Republicans and, you know, stuff like that. literally like 30, 40 times things a day and gets like zero comments because people are just like, stop, you know?
Well, I had, I've got a running joke with my girlfriend that if I post something, because I work from home and a lot of times my only, and I'm not defending my amount of online use because
You're online for work.
I'm an addict. I'm online for work and I have nobody else to talk to all day. So there are times where I'll post something going, I want to talk to somebody about this news story. I'm going to post it and try to get, just to get people to chat with me for a little bit because I'm fucking lonely. This is running joke.
You can always call me Maddie. I'm at work.
But Steph says to me, she goes, I could post the exact same thing as you every day, get no comments, but you get 47 because I've got I generate some churn there on purpose.
Yeah.
I want people to talk at me, you know? Whereas she'll post something and walk away from it, and 3 days later, oh, nobody commented on it because she's less involved with the whole, with her online footprint. But I know a couple of guys who are, they're fire starters.
Yeah.
And they've developed these online personalities where everything they post gets 60, 70, 80 comments. And they get upset if they don't get 60, 70, 80 comments. But I know, and you can tell when they've had a bad day with getting comments back because they'll start to be more inflammatory
right.
The next time around, to the point where one of them had his wife said, I'm going to have to approve everything you post online because you're just making people angry. And now he posts all the bad ideas that his wife vetoed, which is actually kind of, that's entertaining.
Because like, it's on him.
Yeah, things that my wife said was a terrible idea to post, you know, and then...
Yeah,
and generally he gets a lot of comments of, well, your wife's a very smart woman, but the self-involvement of the posting, repetitive posting of your own beliefs.
Well, there's that, and then like I've got a friend from high school who he basically posts status updates all day, so it's like, and one of the things is, he doesn't like the space bar. He must do it all from his phone because, like, it's like, you know, he'll write something in a comma and then, like, write, you know, it's just like, as an editor, it drives me insane just to look at it. Visually, I'm incensed by it. But then it's all like, he works as, he's in the PR biz and he works with, like, big celebrities. Like, he works with, you know, I guess I should be sort of careful, but I don't know, he works with, like, Rihanna and, you know, the Yankees and, you know, like, you know, so he's always like posting stuff about like, just meeting with Sarah Jessica Parker, and, you know. But it's just like all day long he's just posting like, you know, he's been getting into CrossFit, so he's always like posting about his workouts and what he eats and like gets zero comment. Nobody ever like I'm just like kind of part of me like every time I look at him I'm like, it's driving me fucking crazy. And the other hand I'm kind of like, he still doesn't have anybody responding.
It's and then there's that the narcissism phase of, well, nobody responded to them, but they'd respond to me if I posted about such.
Right. Such, you know, well, yeah, you know, I mean,
bragging rights.
I post shit fairly often, but like, I don't feel the need to like post my every thought and whim and activity.
It's funny how, remember when Facebook first kicked up, and maybe even back to MySpace, where it's like, you don't have to tell people when you're taking a leak. Like,
right.
I feel like that has died down to the point where people, we've progressed from past the point of the basic overshare. You know, either the...
well, this guy's still doing it for some reason.
What do they call it? Well, I mean, we still overshare, but past the, like, you know,
going minutia. To
the grocery store.
Yeah.
You know, go,
the mundane minutia.
Watching Mad Men.
Every once in a while, somebody's like, you know, that Market Basket again. Like, I don't give a fuck.
or what do they call it? Vague booking? So sad, you know?
Yeah.
But I think we've gone past
that point. Where they're basically begging you to ask them what's wrong.
Please ask me what's wrong. But I feel like that has died out in favor of flat-out fight starting.
Yeah.
Like, we see less of that and more of, I'm going to post things that are going to annoy the shit out of the maximum number of people possible just to get people to pay attention to me.
Well, and we talked about the whole politics. That was another show we did. And social media and kind of, you know, especially like at the time of the election when we recorded that. And still now, like, you know, I have a friend who's, you know, total Republican and she posted a photo of, she got a roll of toilet paper with Obama's picture on it. She's like, you know, I'm gonna drive my my liberal in-laws crazy or something with this, you know, which actually was kind of funny, but she's always, you know, people like her are always posting shit, you know, like, I got a buddy from high school who is a cop in New Hampshire, and he's always, you know, totally posting about, like anti-Obama stuff, and, you know, and I'm like, you're certainly entitled to, you know, that opinion.
It's a way to get...
But he's totally jabbing. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I right before I left, I had. Have you seen there's a meme kicking around of one of the Supreme Court justices, and he says, "Before we make a decision, has everybody changed their Facebook photo yet?" Or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
And I've seen it posted 40 or 50 times.
Right.
But I saw somebody post it today who is a bigot, to put it like, I've seen it a bunch of times. I've seen it by people that are extremely supportive of gay rights.
Right.
I've seen people post it who, you know, are ambivalent, and it's the same photo.
Right.
And I look at it going, it feels a lot different from somebody who means it that way, like somebody who actually doesn't like gay people.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't... It was so strange to see the same thing, and there it's, and then you trace back to the source of where they grabbed it from, and it's from some, you know, horrific, website.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, it's just it the same
people,
photo.
People take it, yeah, and use it for their own purposes. Well, it's funny, like, you know, the whole gay marriage thing has been, you know, in the news because the Supreme Court is still debating over it, and it, you know. It's funny, like, you mentioned that, and I'm thinking, like, I don't think I've seen anybody post against it. Like, I know a lot of conservatives and folks who are against pretty much everything else, but, you know, I don't know if it's just, like, you know, I've had a few people say, you know, I support gay rights, but I'm not changing my profile picture. I kind of feel the same way. You know, like, everybody's been changing to that, like, equal sign, that red equal sign thing. And
here's a narcissistic moment for you. I had seen all these people posting it. And, you know, like, when you go to your own profile, there's the block of, like, just eight random friends. And I'd looked down a couple of times, and I'd seen, like, you know, there's six out of eight or four out of eight all have the same symbol. I'm like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I ended up posting something along the lines of, well... You know, I just wonder if people forget that no matter what we say, we have no control
over
the Supreme
Court. It's not like they're going to go, oh, wow, everybody changed their Facebook profile.
We can't peer pressure the Supreme Court. And then I go off to go help a friend move, actually. And as I left the house, I'm like, I wonder if I aggravated anybody by saying that. Because, you know, like, and I'm like... self-importance. I'm like, I wonder if that made anybody upset. And I happen to see a couple of friends of mine post,
how dare you?
No, which is funny. This is where the narcissism comes in. One of them had posted something basically saying it's the equivalent of flying a flag at half-mast doesn't make anybody any less dead, but it shows the support for what you agree with. And I'm like, but then I partially felt bad for my being a Judge McJudgers and about people changing the profile picture, and then also I'm like, that motherfucker just called me out. And I happen to be talking to his wife later on. I'm like, was that aimed at me? And he goes, no, he was at so and so's. One of their friends works at a coffee shop, and he heard a bunch of people being
dicks
about it. Yeah, and it was aimed at them, not at your comment, but like, do you want to talk about narcissism? I'm like,
you totally thought it was you.
You're so vain. I bet you think that post is about you.
Carly Simon can re-record that song. Jeez, get relevant again.
You know, and but I mean, you want to talk about the basis of narcissism? Like, all of a sudden, I'm sitting there. I see that on my phone because, God forbid, I log out for 4 hours while I help this guy, help my friend move some furniture. And I see something that I automatically assume was because I had said something and they're countering me, when in fact it had absolutely nothing to do with what I said.
That's me, right? He's totally talking to me.
How often do you see people lash out at each other because they assume that something is directed at them when it's not? And
well, yeah, you know, like, every once in a while I'll see, like, a post and I'll have, like, you know, 60 comments, you kind of go through it and you'll see, like, the arguments, you know, breaking out and the personal attacks within the comments, and, you know, and it's just like, Jesus, people.
Well, I had my girlfriend's sister's brother is pretty much the exact opposite of me politically. Like, it's basically everything that we could possibly disagree about, we disagree. And I made what I thought was a smart move about 6 months ago during the election. I just blocked him. I didn't delete him. I don't hate the guy. I just don't want to hear his stuff.
I feel the same way about people.
Blocked him. So I don't see what he says. But every once in a while, he will come back around because he can't resist countering what I'm saying. And I've got
when you block somebody, they can still see what you post. Exactly.
And he
comes see what they post, right?
Yeah.
So he can still comment on your shit.
Yeah, and he comments on things. And I'm like, I don't even go to your page because it's like the moral equivalent of Calcutta. Like, it just scares me over there. I don't want to hear it. So I don't even look at it because I'm just going to get angry. And at some point, we're going to be sitting down at Christmas dinner and I don't want to hit you. You know, like, it's... You know, but... Like... And it actually got to the point where he came in and just annoyed the crap out of me on my territory.
Right.
And I, of course, rant about it. And then stuff just happened to be going home that weekend. And it turns out he had gone and complained to her sister about it. And her sister goes, "Would you just block him so you don't see what he's saying
anymore?" Oh, he's complaining about you?
Yeah, and I'm like... and then she comes home, "Why don't you just block?" I'm like, "I did. He peed on my lawn, okay? You know, I didn't pee on his."
My digital lawn,
Actually, that was something that, during the elections, I don't even know if I told the story during our election discussion, where I had, the concept of seagull posting, where you flap and you crap all over everything, you make a lot of noise, you fly away.
Yeah.
And, The fact that we are so self-absorbed that you can't resist jumping into something that has almost nothing to do with you. How many times do you get into a conversation and you go, why did I get myself involved in this? Now I'm just going to be angry and annoyed at people I barely know.
Right.
Because I disagreed with them for 5 minutes and now it's...
And me personally, I try to stay out of like those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
I do like to kind of, you know, I kind of like to jump in and like, you know, make fun of people or crack wise. So I kind of do that sometimes. And then like every once in a while, you know, somebody will say like, I know today posted about, she was going to go see Stephen King, I think speak somewhere, but like the tickets were like $200 and $300. And I was like, "Hey, a guy's got to eat." And somebody else posts, "Yeah, but you know, you could have spam every once in a while." I was like, "I was kidding." You know? Yeah, just like, you know, and then you're like, oh, you know,
why did I even? It's
why
whole,
am I even? Why, then why? I have because then you like when you reply, you have to see all the other comments pop up. You know, and you're like show up on your in your feed, and it's like,
and suddenly you're permanently involved in
the and I'm like, you know, sometimes it makes you hesitant to wish somebody congratulations for having a kid or being pregnant or whatever. And then like 750 people, you know, chime in. You've got to see every like, congrats. You know, it's like, right.
And you want to talk about the internet promoting self-absorption. How many happy birthdays did you get online this year?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, how many of you people didn't know my birthday? I appreciate the thought. And, you know, occasionally
somebody... I prefer to think of it as just, you know... I mean, if they didn't really give a shit about you, they wouldn't wish you know what I mean? Like,
no, they wouldn't.
Because every once in a while, I guess somebody, like, whose name pops up is happy birthday, and I don't... I usually do. I'm usually pretty good about it. But every once in a while, I'm like,
I don't actually know
I don't need to wish that person happy birthday.
You've got plenty of people who...
I don't even know why I'm friends with this person. That's the whole thing, too, you know? The insatiable need for people to have... friends, whether they're Facebook friends or, you know, I see it on LinkedIn. I don't know if you do LinkedIn at all, but there are people on LinkedIn who have like 8,000 connections or whatever the fuck they call it, you know, and I actually think LinkedIn is useful. Like a lot of people are kind of like, what the fuck, you know, I don't care about this, but I don't use it as like a social tool, but, you know, it's good for just like staying in touch and
you stick your resume on there. And I only think of LinkedIn when somebody does something to my LinkedIn profile.
Like they've got this endorsement thing. Have you seen this? Like, you know,
I can't tell if it's telling people to. I keep getting endorsed by people I have not asked.
Right. Well, no. What it is on there now. I didn't realize this until I'm like, why is, you know, so-and-so endorsing me for newsletters?
Yeah.
Like, you basically, you put things down as your skills or whatever, publishing, editing, writing. And then, like, there's a thing where, like, when it lists your friends, you could, it says, like, you know, endorse your friend underneath. Like,
and you just click on it.
And you can click on it and see what their skills are, and then you can... So that's how it. That's how it works.
It's just clicking. It's not like.
Yeah, it's a new. It's kind of like. Well, it doesn't really mean anything. But,
it's funny.
I mean, it's, you know, it's like a like, you know, or it's like, you know, you like somebody's comment.
Back at the birth of LinkedIn, I was going out with a girl working in HR. And she's like, "Oh, sign up for LinkedIn." Blah blah blah. And so I had a profile on LinkedIn like 2 or 3 years before it boomed. If it ever really did boom, like it's sort of it's more like.
I think it's
poofed.
It's still kind of
active, but it's not. It's not addictive. I think that's
there are people who are like into it.
Yeah, it's the people that have like the what do they call them? Do they call them thought leaders? It's one of my least favorite terms in the entire world.
Yeah, I hate that.
But
well, you can follow people on there now. Like that's a thing now. I see people following. You know, like. Steve Jobs, well, not Steve Jobs, since he's dead,
oh, yeah.
But Bill Gates, or, you know, people like that, you know, Richard Branson, you know, always like, and I guess they post shit and people are interested, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that have done well by it. A lot of the work that I do is mostly stuff that's going to be word of mouth anyway. I'm more likely to find work. Here's the ultimate self-absorption, and God forbid anybody from this side of my work actually listens to this podcast, but there is nobody... Yes, please.
All right, keep talking. All
right. There's nobody more self-absorbed than the film community.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And...
Keep talking.
All right, and what I end up... Because we all have to do it. It's part of the job. You got to promote.
You got to pick your stuff.
Yeah, you know. And but there are days where it's like nobody cares. Nobody cares about my project. Nobody cares about your project. None of us is that important.
Right.
We're not saving the world. We're making movies. You know. And I actually kind of get sick to death of my and my own friends' press. It's like, how many times can you post pictures of yourself in your director's hat behind the camera? Cheers.
Whereas you can post those creepy clown photos and I will laugh my ass off every time.
Well, but see, and you go back to self-absorption. I post, for those of you at home, I have a series of photos of me in a clown costume from a film from a few years back.
Which
I deliberately post to antagonize people because it freaks a large number of my friends out. So every once in a while, I'm going to upset people and post myself as a clown. Just like I infringe on copyright and post myself as the Incredible Hulk when I'm having a shitty day. Hey, everybody, I'm angry. I'm going to turn green and throw a car at a helicopter. But the clown
thing... If only we could all do that.
I know. But the clown thing is... It's very deliberate. It's in order to I want to egg people on because nobody likes that clown picture. Apparently, it is the creepiest thing in the world.
I've seen some creepier ones, but it is pretty creepy. It's creepy funny. It's not creepy like.
Well, the best part is it's a creepy, just barely unidentifiable. The undersized hat, and the fact that I'm not smiling. I just looked deadpan into the camera. short version of the actual story. I actually was dressed as a clown unexpectedly. It was not in the script. They thought it was funny. I get into the clown suit. We're shooting in the woods, and so whenever whoever wasn't on camera wasn't needed, they'd go back to the car to warm up, which was also the power source for the camera equipment. So there was wires leading from the hood of the car out into the woods, and so I'm warming up. I'm sitting in the back of the car, dressed as a clown, taking my own picture on my cell phone. In a car with wires leading out into the woods, and at least 6 people walked by and just saw me sitting in the car, and it scared the shit out of them because there's a clown in the backseat of that car doing nothing by himself, and the car is running. What the hell is going on here?
Suicidal clown.
The best part is with the clown thing. It's going back to the narcissism thing. Once I was in the clown costume, which I did not, that was under duress. I wanted nothing to do with it. I don't like clowns. I didn't want to be a clown. It was like becoming that which you hate. But once you're in it, I realized that perverts don't become clowns. Clowns become perverts because you can do anything dressed as a clown, and everybody's gonna be freaked out anyway. Nobody's not gonna know who you are. So at first I was self-conscious, And then we got stuck in the snow, and I offered to get out and push because I was dressed as a clown. Like, you know what the best thing in the world would be? Is if a creepy clown gets out of this car and gets out to push. Because everybody's going to stop and stare. We're actually going to cause car accidents. And to this day, it was one of the funniest days I've ever had on set because I would deliberately keep my back to the sidewalk, and when I hear joggers coming by, I'd turn around and look at them.
And they're like, "Nah!"
You're
Narcissism thing with people in the arts, there's this need to pump your own ego up and to pimp your shit, and the amount of times you've got to sound self-important. I talked to an actress friend of mine, and she sounded like she's doing well. I'm like, how's everything going out in such and such city? And she says, I'm lying because I don't want people to feel bad for me. So I'm making it sound like I'm having a great time working on all these projects when, in fact, I'm barely scraping by. I'm working at Starbucks and, you know, I'm getting occasional unpaid acting jobs. But by her daily self-promotion,
right,
it sounded like she was rocking it in L.A. and taking over the world, you know? I know a couple of... And we're all shameless self-promoters in that line of work. You just end up... It's the only way to get
by. But now it seems like everybody's a shameless self-promoter. Like, you know, like, the whole thing about selfies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was that ever a phenomenon before, like, you know, 6-7 years ago where people just started taking pictures of themselves? And, or the people who, like, take a picture of themselves, like, every day or, like, you know, like, every once in a while you see that whole thing.
Oh, where they do that?
Which is actually kind of interesting. But
I think that
takes a huge amount of narcissism to sit there
and take your picture every single day.
It is interesting to see like how people looks change over years, or I don't know, like every day or every month or whatever the fuck it is.
Those require commitment and you have to be dedicated to your narcissism to get that done, because you're gonna at some point have to string 360 or whatever photos together. And but the selfie wasn't really a phenomenon until we all had digital cameras in our pockets
when it was easy and cheap to do. You didn't do it when you had to pay for film.
Nobody was taking self portraits when they had a Kodak with that,
right.
You know,
a digital camera, I guess, you know, when you can take a, you know, I don't know, whatever, 100,000 photos on, you know, one memory card or whatever. But
and
even then,
what's interesting too is seeing which industries are impacted by this, the digital openness. Like in a lot of ways, the actual profession of photography is dying a rapid death, because everybody's a photojournalist. Everybody has access.
Right. Everybody's like, oh, look at that sunset. I'll take a picture of that and post. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Have you ever seen pictures of this? I forget if it was a Tumblr or something like that, but it was hipsters taking pictures of food.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Pictures of 20-something New Yorkers taking pictures of their own meals. It was kind of hilarious because, like, oh, wait a minute, I'm having an ice cream sundae. I think
there's some restaurants now that have banned that.
But yeah, don't take pictures of our goddamn food.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the camera is the tool of the narcissist, really. Like, if you can get your own photo, and you're a narcissist, you're going to use it.
It's just funny, like, you know, I'm a little older than you, but I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, you know, I don't know if it was just we didn't have the technology when we were younger to be this narcissistic, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there are people who sat there and stared at themselves in the mirror.
Yeah, but...
Drew their own picture or whatever, but...
You didn't... Digital photography, online instant gratification,
YouTube,
social networking.
YouTube videos.
YouTube. Like,
you know, like...
How many people...
These, like, these morons who, like, you know... Remember that chick in, I think it was at UCLA or somewhere, like, bitching about the Asians, you know, like, the blonde, like, the bimbo's like, all these Asians, they all talk funny, and it's just like,
well, what about...
Fucking idiot.
It's, and we reward narcissism.
Oh,
people,
yeah.
People do stupid shit in the hopes that it gets spotted on YouTube.
Totally.
And
well, Jackass, you know, you see Jackass.
Jackass was one of the early stages of inspired narcissism, because they were a bunch of... Well, nitwits running around, jumping off of
even the whole you know, reality TV thing where people will do anything to get on TV. Mm-hmm. People will do anything. This fucking show, was it Dive? I mean, it's the show with celebrity people, celebrity in air quotes. But, you know, you got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and, you know, all these, like,
I was watching D-list celebrities. The commercials for that thing. And I just turned to the family that I was with and, like, why would anybody put themselves through that?
Right. Because they want to be on TV. But and those are actually semi-famous people. But, like, you look at a show like, well, actually, you know, this Wicked Love. Wicked Single?
Wicked Single.
Yeah.
No, that's about
it. This is a VH1. Has that even been on yet? It hasn't started.
There's been two episodes.
Oh, has there? I forgot to watch it.
A friend of mine knows a PA on it who said they're already canceling shoots, so I think it might be already on the way out the door. Oh. But it was.
It looks. I mean, it's a VH1 reality show about basically trying to be like the Jersey Shore of Boston. And it's these following these like five drunkard idiots around town making fools themselves, one of whom actually used to work at the company that we worked for.
Which is the only reason why I heard about the show at all anyway.
Right. And watching the trailer, you know, they're totally amping up the bogus Boston accent. That one chick was like, we party hard and we work something hard. I was like, what the fuck?
Here's how you knew that it was gonna bomb though, because I am around all the local film people who are
work on it.
Well, I had posted something along the lines of, because I was upset that, you know, Boston already gets made fun of enough. Like, who did this? Why would you do this to us? Haven't we suffered enough? And then I hit post, and I'm like, shit, I bet you I know like five or six PAs on that show. I shouldn't have done that.
Well, there's another show, too, about Real Housewives. Real Housewives of Southie was
a parody. That was brilliant.
There is a show.
Southie Rules or something but the fact that nobody laid claim to it. Like, because I know...
They're embarrassed.
There's a tendency among film extras to claim that they were in X film where they worked with X actor.
Sure.
And it's gone on, I swear it's gone on since the 1940s. Like, oh, I was in that film with so-and-so. You were a lamppost. You know, like, you were paid, congratulations, you were an extra, good for you, you got some free food, you got your $88 a day. You didn't work with Harrison Ford. You know, like, it's, you were an extra. It's not anything to be ashamed of, but goddamn it, you didn't work on that film. You were man on bus 47. And but there's that narcissistic quality there of, like, you know, the being an extra is not a humane experience generally. You're cattle, yeah. You're human. The things that you are called by the people who actually hold the pocketbooks are not nice things. You're set dressing. You're movable set dressing, and they don't particularly respect you. But the pride that people get of being able to say, like, pausing,
that was me.
There I am. I'm in the background.
Yeah,
it's like, holy shit! You had 5 seconds of screen time at Fenway Park. You're one of 600 people on screen. You're so proud of that because that made you feel like you were part of the, you know,
right?
You were famous for 1/100th of a second. It's amazing.
But then, you know, you've got, you know, you see these shows like The Bachelor and, you know, all these dating shows where people just, like, humiliate themselves. And it's just so funny because people really, like, love those shows. Like, they're, like, in, you know,
they run for decades.
People are, like, all fired up. Like, I see people posting on fucking Facebook, like, oh, my God, I can't believe Ryan was with, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, you know, if you ever see any of these shows, like, you know, these women all get all, you know, get all weepy, like, even the guy, the bachelor, is all like, you know, this is the toughest decision I've ever had to make. I'm like, you just met these bimbos like 2 days ago, and freaking just made out with all 10 of them, you know?
Well, and the things that people do just to, because I remember seeing an interview with someone maybe 5 or 6 years into Real World, one of the producers, and they said that they will never get back the naivete that they had in the first season or two.
And I watched the first probably 3 or 4 seasons of that. It was good TV, and it was something different at the time.
I was young enough that I actually really liked the first 5 years or so.
Yeah.
But what they're saying is that after a certain point, you hit the generation where these kids grew up watching it.
Right.
And when they get cast, they go, okay, I'm the angry black guy. I'm the douchey white guy. And they all know their role and why they were cast, and then
I'm the slut.
they then act to it as opposed to being themselves, whereas the first few years they had a bunch of very confused people who had never been on camera before actually right. acting like themselves.
Right.
And we've hit a point where...
And it's... I'm sure it's, like, super scripted, too, or, you know... Or at least, you know, the producers kind of angle it in a way that... Obviously, they're editing it.
They're editing it, and I've actually known a few people that have been on reality shows, and they will have you go back and do things again.
Right.
Like, oh, did you just say... Could you say that again? We didn't get it.
Right.
And so In essence, it is scripted. In essence, it isn't reality anymore. At some point, it was.
For a couple of years. You know, they'll nudge you in the direction they think is more interesting.
Yeah, and they'll manipulate, you know, especially with shows with contestants and stuff.
Big Brother is a huge one where they've got, you know, the cameras everywhere and, you know, the confessionals and all that stuff.
They do things to make things happen. It's not. Right. There's no such thing as reality TV. Once you put a camera in front of somebody these days, there's no
reality. It's probably the least real TV, you know? I mean, at least with scripted TV, they're telling a story. I mean, it's not, you know, with this, it's just kind of, you know, you're just trying to get a reaction.
What was it? There was Mandy Patinkin said that scripted TV is the only chance you actually get to tell both sides of the story. Because you have a script and you have a process and you can actually construct both sides evenly and make sure everybody has their...
Whereas reality, you're getting whatever...
You're just getting whatever the Yahoos are doing on screen at any given time.
Well, you're getting whatever they deign to show you. Mm-hmm. You know, they obviously they probably could have footage of the other side of the story, but they're not going to show you that.
Yeah, it's not interesting. And how many years into it was it before we started hearing people go, well, you didn't see the rest of that, or you didn't see... I think it wasn't until, and I can't remember the exact, I know it was a real world situation where you didn't see the rest of the story, this is why this happened, they created artificial drama through editing.
Yeah.
I mean, every project that takes place on camera is made in the editing suite. Like that's where every film, every TV show, every reality show, every YouTube video, it's all in the editing suite that turns it into a story. But... You know, maybe far beyond, well before Facebook, MySpace, and Friendster ever occurred.
Friendster.
I just date myself right there.
I never even been on Friendster. I was on MySpace, but Friendster. Actually, I never did Friendster.
Funny story about Friendster. I was on Friendster because I was just the right age. I was in the right part of my 20s to be on it.
Because that was like 2000, early... Late 90s, early 2000s.
It was whenever I was living in New York. I was let's do the math here. I was 26.
You were
26.
Living in New York? Home
I was living in Brooklyn. Lived in Greenpoint in Poland.
How long?
Only less than a year. I ran out of money.
Yeah.
That and I was living with heroin dealers. I've never told you this?
No.
I moved to New York.
This before...
Pre-HC. Between newspaper gigs, I was I quit newspapers to go and move to New York, and then I came back and I became.
I think I knew you went to New York, but I forgot about it.
I don't think I've ever told you the whole story. I moved to New York, rented a place from what seemed like a very nice couple with a 2 or 3 year old son, and it turned out that they were heroin dealers.
Shit.
And then when I tried to move, I ran out of money and I ended up moving home. That was my New York failed experience. Also, I was in New York freelancing for clients in Seattle, Boston, and Florida. And I'm like, why am I living in New York when
you don't need to be there?
I could be living in Kansas, and why am I paying?
Could have been living in Connecticut.
It was pretty ridiculous. But I was living in New York and using I was on Friendster, but I got a call from my friend who I don't know if you hear this, so I won't name him. But that, you know, the precursor to the Facebook tendency of changing things and not telling you, they put in a function. They stealthed in a function. Where you could see who looked at your profile and how many times.
Oh.
And they didn't tell anybody. And he had been stalking his ex-girlfriend and her new boyfriend and clicking on their profile repeatedly and angrily and, like, he was just upset, you know?
But he wasn't doing anything with the information.
No, he was just going, she's going out with, like, he was sitting there going, she's going out with this douchebag, she's going out with it, and he kept clicking on their profiles back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then he looks and he realizes he's clicked on their profiles like 41 times.
Jesus.
And I get a call, because this was pre-text message. Don't click on anybody's profile. They can see if you've looked at it. Don't stalk any of your ex-girlfriends. But, I mean,
well, that was a big thing. I remember a few years ago on Facebook where there would be like the spam things going around, like, you know, see who looked, you clicked on your profile, you know?
Well,
because I guess, you know, I guess there's people are interested in that.
Is narcissism, who looked at me? I want to know. They just added something. I don't know if they've actually announced it or not. Did you notice that you can now see how many people are following your discussion?
No.
I don't know how it works, because I just saw it and there were 4 people following, but only 2 people had commented on it. I'm like, that's interesting.
What constitutes following? Like, you have to look at all the comments or something? Like, how do you even
I don't know what that means.
Quantify that?
I've heard nothing about it. I just saw it the other day.
Facebook just does whatever the fuck they want. I mean, you know, hey, it's free, so.
Well, and that's it's
people bitch about Facebook. It's like, you know, nobody's forcing you to be on Facebook. You
and
know
it's
mean?
the old saying, if you don't pay for anything, you are not the consumer. You are
the
product. Yeah, you are what they're selling to other people.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I always, when Google Plus popped up, you know, everybody, oh, I'll go check it out. I'll sign up for it. I don't really use it. And then I said, well, why do we all migrate from MySpace to Facebook? Like, why are we not moving to Google from Facebook? You know, what did Facebook have that Google, that what did Facebook have that MySpace doesn't?
The cool factor, I guess, right?
Well, one of my friends said was, Facebook wasn't a hot mess. There wasn't the whole, like, changing your wall colors and the music and everything else. But what it was I think the reason why people are going to stick around with that for much longer than we ever would have thought is old people use it.
Yeah.
Your parents are on it. Your grandparents are
Thank
on
God
it.
Thank God my mom's
intergenerational.
On it.
I do some weird shit with my film stuff. Like, there's times, like, don't tag me in any of these photos, my grandmother, or, you know, like, I don't need to be questioned about this stuff.
Why do you have blood on your face?
Yeah, I just did a shoot where there's demon hands coming out of my mouth, right?
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's pretty trippy. I'll send you the photo. But, like, I said to the photographer afterwards, I'm like, just...
Don't tag me.
Send it to me, and if it's not weird, I'll post it. But just let me make the final call, because my relatives are on here.
Right.
I don't want to have to explain it to everybody. You know,
well, every once in a while, like, I'll, you know, make a Jesus joke or something, you know, and then I'll be like, I got friends who are Jesus-y, you know.
Well, mid conversation. I forget what the hell it was. One of those. Every once in a while, I have one of those epic, like, 40, 50 comment things.
Mm.
And I, somewhere, like, halfway through it, and I know one of the nicest hardcore Christians in the world. She's one of the sweetest people I've ever met. And she had commented on whatever the hell I was talking about. But it went on long enough that I announced my religious anti-belief.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, I liked being her friend. You know? Like, now I feel really bad about.
No, now she's gonna be. Now she's really gonna be your friend, because she's gonna want to save you.
No, that's why I like her. She wouldn't try to save me.
Oh,
she
that's good. That's good, actually.
Like, yeah. I just completely trashed everything she believes in. I'm a son of a bitch. Because I wanted to egg on the conversation and keep people talking on my page. I wanted to see the little one button pop up in red at the top of my screen.
It's,
you know,
yeah, you know, and now, you know, with smartphones, you know, you can just kind of check it out, and you see that little one, or you see a six, and you're like, ooh, what's this all about? And I'm like,
you ever, when did Googling yourself become a verb?
In the last 5 years, I would say, yeah.
Because we are such a omnipresent society, you almost have to. You have to know what's out there about yourself.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
And but when did that happen, that we were so present in a place that we had no control over, that you had to check out what your online footprint looked like regularly to make sure there was nothing weird out there? Like, that's...
That's usually not why people do it, though.
They want to see. They want to see
who's talking about.
Who's talking about? Yeah. What am I getting for? They're talking about the weird narcissism. Googling myself because I get an IMDb page. I want to see what see what pops up. And every once in a while, I want to see something weird popped up about a movie review or something. Like I found reviews of stuff I've written, stuff I've been in that have not been favorable. So I don't do it that often because I'm thin-skinned with this stuff. So.
I can imagine that, you know, major celebrities either do or don't for the same reason, you know. Like,
I would imagine.
They want to see what's written about them or, you know, they can't help themselves.
I think the smart ones have staff that don't tell them what they find but keep track of it.
But now it's so easy to do it yourself, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, in the past, 15, 20 years ago, you had a clip service. You would get all, they would collect all newspaper clippings with your name in them. Now, you fucking get your phone out, do it while you're drinking your latte or whatever.
Yeah, it's I need a copy of, as a performer, you go in for an audition. People still bring paper resumes as a courtesy.
Right,
but they already have it on. I run castings every once in a while. I think it's fun. I like putting the right people in the right. For once, I'm not the one being the narcissist. I'm just putting people where I think they belong.
Right.
And if somebody shows up without their headshot or resume, I'm like, do I already have it online? Don't even worry about it. Totally fine. We got your name. You're all set. I got it. It's on my smartphone already. I can look at your picture right now. But there's one time where I'm Googling myself because weird shit pops up, and I found out that somebody had exported every actor on IMDb and created a nude scene page for them. In the anticipation, should any of these actors ever do nude scenes, they would then link to photos of them in.
That's a lot of pages.
It's a lot of pages because I had one.
I mean, that's like hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions.
Yeah, like right? Everybody who was under the actress listing on IMDb had a page waiting for them. It's essentially like, the Mr. Skin type of thing. But it
so
was...
now, how do you get an IMDb page? Do you have to like if you're somebody like you? I mean, did somebody created one for you, right?
Yeah, it's funny because it's one of those things where if you work in film. It's not as big a deal as everybody else thinks it is, but you're still proud of it when it happens.
Yeah.
Because basically all you need is your film to be submitted to a film festival.
Okay.
If your film has some sort of... It's been finished, it's been submitted...
It's been seen by somebody
has viewed it, even if it's been rejected.
Right.
But it's been seen, it's been viewed, it's been addressed and rejected or accepted, you get an IMDb page.
So who decides that?
Is there like Amazon owns IMDb.
There's like some sort of editorial board at IMDb that kind of says, "All right,
I think it's we'll
get all the list of all the films at X festivals, and then just enter
they've partnered with a couple of other websites where the people producing the film because I produced the film.
Mm-hmm.
And when I submitted it to, it's an online file sharing. This is I feel bad for every filmmaker in the past 80 years because they didn't have what we have.
Yeah.
I can take my film, I upload it to a website, it's hosted there, it's secure, only the people that I give access to can watch it. And I go, here's my list of credits. Here's who shot it, here's who was in it, here's who wrote it, here's who lit it, here's who did the sound. And I, granted, you need an ADD, not an ADD, an OCD producer, not the exact opposite. You need an OCD producer.
Keeps track of all that shit.
Which is, and I sat there for hours one night and just listed every single person who worked on it, and then it asks you, do they have an IMDb page already? You check, okay, yes, so and so has it, and I linked everybody who had one, and anybody who didn't have one, you say no, they're new, and suddenly, boom, they've got an IMDb page. It's not what it used to be. It used to actually be something that was like you're in a legitimate film that was screened someplace and people saw you in a film.
Right.
Now it's because it's connected to Without a Box, which is a site that hosts the films which is nice because basically The Brothers McMullen cost $28,000 to make.
Right.
And $25,000 of it was the actual celluloid, the print
right,
of the
right,
film.
Yeah.
That's gone. Nobody has to do that anymore. You want to make a film? You just need a hard drive and you upload it to the site. So
I mean, there are people making films on their smartphones.
I mean, yeah, you can.
You know, if you get, you know, you can do it. I mean, probably not recommended, but.
Well, have you seen that they've got? You talk about the, why would you do that, you narcissistic bastard? They have adapters where you can put a legitimate SLR lens on your iPhone.
Oh, really? Oh, shit.
Which I think I would actually beat somebody to death with. Just spend the $600
yeah, right.
and buy yourself a real camera, dude. But they're not that expensive. You can get a Sony for like $300. Just go do it. And but the accessibility, like suddenly you can, anybody can be a filmmaker.
Listening to Completely Conspicuous with Jay Kumar.
That was Ty Siegel with You're the Doctor, Slater Kinney with Jumpers, and Le Butcherettes with Henry Don't Need Love. And now it's time for the Bonehead of the Week. This week's honor goes to James Denham Watson, a 31-year-old Virginia man who was arrested on March 24th after allegedly assaulting his roommate. Police say that Watson had passed out on a couch and woke up to find someone had drawn penises on his face. In a rage, Watson allegedly ran upstairs to where his roommate was asleep and jumped on him, repeatedly punching him in the face. A third roommate woke up and broke up the attack. The victim reportedly waited about 90 minutes to call police while deciding whether or not to press charges. He did end up calling for help, and police charged Watson with malicious wounding. The injured man's eye was swollen shut and bleeding, so the third roommate drove him to the hospital for treatment, according to police. The local ABC affiliate reports that Watson was subsequently arrested and charged with malicious wounding. Which I just said. Hey, give the guy a break. He's only 31. I'm sure when he's 41 and passes out and has dicks drawn on his face, he'll be totally chill about it. And now to close things out, here's a couple of songs related to our discussion.
I'm all used up. just to make this dream come into play.
Beatles with I, Me, Mine off the Let It Be album, and Matthew Sweet with Sick of Myself from the 100% Fun album. And that wraps up episode 272 of Completely Conspicuous. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time when Matt Fillion and I continue talking about narcissism. The Jeff the Brotherhood song is on the album We Are the Champions on Infinity Cat Recordings / Warner Music. You can download it for free at Epitonic. The Little Butcherette song is on the album Sin 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 on Rodriguez Lopez Productions. The Slater Kinney song is on the album The Woods on Sub Pop. And the Ty Segall song is on the album Twins on Drag City. All these songs are available for free download at epitonic.com. Jay Bratling produced the opening and closing themes of the show. Voiceover work is courtesy of James Grillion. Completely Conspicuous is a Tan God production.